Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I'm Matt.
And today we are answering your listener questions.
Hey, Joel. We have a listener questions episode up. That means we are going to get to cover a variety of topics. We're going to answer a question about what to do when you are upside down in a loan, specifically a car loan. We're going to cover how to attack some student loan debt, how to go about paying that off. And we're also going to cover a question about someone who is caught in a tough situation where they are loaning money to a family member and then what to do about that situation. So we're going to get to those three plus two others during this episode.
Sounds good, man. I'm looking forward to it. I love the unique questions that we get from our listeners. We've got some really good ones to cover today on the show.
Yeah, we always have a nice little variety. But man, before we get to those, I wanted to share something with you. Kate and I, we recently got back in town. We were visiting her parents and she made fun of me because I pulled out my phone. We're sitting at a stoplight and I pulled out my phone and I pulled up GasBuddy. You've heard of GasBuddy, right?
Of course.
You use them. You're able to look on a little map or it's listed out sometimes and you can find where gas prices are the cheapest. And Kate saw me doing that and she was totally making fun of me because she's like, look, what are you really going to save? You know, I ended up saving about 10 cents per gallon. And granted, like that's only a couple bucks, you know, when like I'm filling up a 20 gallon tank. But she, in her mind, that was an example of me being, I guess, miserly, maybe being cheap over frugal. But yeah, what are your thoughts there?
Well, I don't typically use GasBuddy unless I'm on the road because usually I know kind of what the gas prices are in my area, right?
Very true. I hadn't thought about that. I never actually use GasBuddy in Atlanta because I just go where I go. I don't necessarily look for, you know, wherever it's cheapest. I just go to the same gas station because it's pretty dang cheap and it's convenient.
Yeah. But no, I think using GasBuddy or there are other similar apps and websites that kind of track the price of gas wherever you are. I think you know me. I'm not ashamed of doing whatever it takes to save a couple dollars in most circumstances. I'm the guy who wrapped his car to make some extra money every month.
I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Actually.
So I'm always willing to experiment or do something different. And I'm, you know, I feel like GasBuddy and looking up gas prices is the same. I don't mind doing that one extra step to save a couple of bucks. But I will say I forget a lot of times too. So yeah. I just kind of stop wherever's most convenient.
Yeah, well, for me, I think a big part of it is kind of like fostering a money saving mindset, right? Where you're sort of flexing this muscle to ask yourself the question, like, can I get this, but maybe for a little bit cheaper? I think there's nothing wrong with that. And I think that it's good for us to challenge ourselves to spend less money to try to find that deal. But obviously, it's when we're spending too much of our time or we're driving across town just to save a buck or two, you know, when you're beholden to scoring a deal, you know, I think that's when it can really screw things up. You know, like when your life is dictated by what the GasBuddy app says, well, then that's a bad situation. And that's maybe when you could be considered cheap. But generally speaking, I think it's good to think creatively on different ways to save money. And that's one of the things that you and I like to do.
Yeah, I think back in the day, too, I probably would have looked something up on GasBuddy and then I would have driven.
Like Googled it and like cross-referenced it at the library.
Well, then I probably would have driven like 7 or 8 or 10 minutes out of my way in order to get the lowest price because I was that intent on paying the lowest amount, not thinking about the value of my time, not thinking about, you know, all the inconveniencing other people, maybe in the car with me, whatever. And so I feel like my mindset has changed drastically on that. And I'm not willing to do that anymore. But if it is on my way to the interstate, let's say,
then
I'm happy to look it up on GasBuddy and make sure I hit the gas station that's on my route that has the lowest price instead of paying 10 cents a gallon more than I should. So yeah, I think it's all in that sort of balance mind frame of how we deal with money. And I think GasBuddy can be a helpful tool. I know my dad, who drives all around Atlanta for his job. I'm not sure if he uses it. I think he does. But if he doesn't, he should because he's all over the place. And how do you remember who's got the cheapest price?
Exactly. Yeah. But what you said about kind of approaching it with a balance in mind, like that's what we're all about. And that's also why we have a beer, a very nice craft beer, typically every episode. And our beer for this episode is called I Want to Dance with Somebody. This is a double New England style IPA from Monday Night Brewing, one of our favorite local breweries here. We each have one of these, man. And I'm looking forward to sharing our thoughts at the end of the episode.
Yeah, pretty sure this beer is going to make my taste buds want to dance. So, yeah, let's...
A little boogie in your mouth.
Let's dig in while we're answering some listener questions. But, all right, so on to those listener questions. For anybody out there listening who has a question they want to submit for Matt and I to take on the show, We would love to hear it. We love getting emails from you with your audio attachment of a listener question. And it's so easy to submit your question to be on a future episode. Just go to howtomoney.com/ask and it'll take you a minute or two to create that question and send it on over our way. And hopefully we can take yours at a future date. All right, Matt, but let's get to the first question for this episode. This one is about being upside down on a vehicle loan.
Hey guys, this is Corey calling from Wilmington, North Carolina. I'm reaching out to see if you have any advice on how to navigate a severely upside down vehicle loan. Long story short, I purchased my Jeep new in 2017. Since purchasing the vehicle, I have moved states and am now making about $12,000 less a year. On top of that, the Jeep has started to experience major mechanical issues, such as the four-wheel drive dropping out and the transmission regularly overheating. I've checked into these issues and found that neither are covered by my warranty, and I do not meet lemon law criteria in my state or the state that I purchased the vehicle in. I really can't continue to keep up with my payments, which are $492 a month, and pay for all the maintenance that it needs in order for it to be a reliable source of transportation. I have been successful in lowering my insurance payments, so that's helped a little bit. And I did try refinancing, but was unable to do so. So any suggestions or advice you could give would be greatly appreciated. Thank you so much.
Hey, Corey, thanks so much for that question. And yeah, no lenders are probably going to want to, you know, let you do a refinance when you're upside down on that car loan. And just generally speaking here, I'm sorry. I've owned two Jeeps in my lifetime. And in both cases, I was really excited to be done with those vehicles. They're kind of the worst, man. They cost so much money to maintain. There's all sorts of problems. I think to own a Jeep is to know sorrow, you know?
Oh gosh. Well, I've never owned one, so I'm glad. I did get to like drive my buddies one time.
Oh, they're fun to drive.
I swear the way people look at you though, it's almost worth it. They're like, oh, that guy's in a Jeep. He's real cool. I never got those looks in any other car that I drove.
That's because you drove like a 91
Camry or something
like
that.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
But all right, Corey, sorry about the car troubles you're experiencing. And by the way, Matt, when you're talking about the reliability of a car, it is important before people buy any car to look at the reliability numbers from places like Consumer Reports and JD Power, because that can help you kind of know what you're getting into. Oftentimes, the issues with these cars are pretty well documented. But yeah, let's first talk about lemon laws, because Corey mentioned that. And it's important, Corey, to make sure to continue to document the issues that your car is having, right? If they happen frequently enough, and typically that means that you need to be able to document 3 unsuccessful repair attempts, then you will qualify under your state's lemon law. So if these issues persist and you have the documentation, then you will qualify. But if you don't have it thoroughly documented and you haven't had those 3 repair attempts, then you're not going to be able to qualify under that. But definitely make sure to look at your state's lemon law and what it takes to have your vehicle considered a lemon under that law. But there is a chance if these issues persist that you might be able to qualify even though you don't currently.
And then Corey, let's talk about your income. You know, you just mentioned how your income has decreased some. You know, if your car is repossessed because you can't make payments, remember that will affect your credit for 7 years, and that's a really long time. And then on top of that, you'll also be without transportation. And also, as well, you'll likely be sent a bill for deficiency because of the negative equity that the lender is now on the hook for and the repo costs that they will incur. So all that to say, this is not an ideal scenario either, and it's just a mess that you'll want to completely avoid.
Yeah, and the lender doesn't even want the car back. There are a lot of costs that they'll incur that they'll pass on to you if they do end up having to repossess it. So repossession is something that, if you can avoid it, it's something that you do want to avoid. But right now, though, in particular, because of COVID, you mentioned that your income has decreased. Well, you should actually be able to get your payment deferred because of the coronavirus, right? And almost 8% of auto loans actually thus far have had their loan terms changed. So we're talking about almost 1 in 10 people with a car loan have been able to call up and have some of the terms changed because they're going through a tough time right now. And that's something that you should be pursuing, Corey, if you can, in order to give you that breathing room. The length and the specifics of what the payment deferment will look like are going to vary based on which lender you have your loan through, right? Like, for example, I think, Matt, we mentioned months ago when Ally Financial first announced that they were doing 120 days of deferment for any of their customers.
Automatically.
Yeah, for impacted, right? So other lenders offering, you know, more like 90 days, and some of those blanket deferrals just aren't happening in the same way, but they are working with people individually. And so I would suggest calling your lender up ASAP and specifically asking for a similar 3 or 4 month deferral, and specifically state you want no late fees charged, and you can ask for an interest rate reduction as well. You might be able to get better overall terms for your loan. And like Matt said at the beginning of answering your question, a refinance isn't going to happen when you're upside down, but your current lender might be able to offer you special help right now because of COVID circumstances. And it sounds like you'll qualify. And I would imagine just that conversation with your lender could help in a major way.
Yeah, you know, I wish we just had better news for you, Corey, but there isn't a magic pill, you know, or an easy button that you can just hit, you know, just a long road of some hard work where you're making phone calls. But keep in mind, too, once you've been able to pay down some of that loan in the future and you are less underwater on that car, it might make sense to go ahead and sell that Jeep and buy something a whole lot cheaper, something more affordable and more reliable. And then with that money that you're saving, you can maybe head to New Anthem. She mentioned that she's in Wilmington. New Anthem's a really good brewery there. That's one of our favorites. Maybe you can go there and celebrate with a really good beer.
Yeah, yeah. So, Corey, again, sorry you're going through this difficult time. And this is one of the reasons that Matt and I are not typically in favor of people buying new cars. It can get out of hand, especially if your income goes down. There are so many ways in which a new car loan can be detrimental. But best of luck as you move forward, and hopefully your lender is able to work something out with you that is to your mutual benefit, that gives you that breathing room and allows you to stay in the car. And also, if that car continues to have issues, remember to document those, because that will help you in the long run as well. All right, Matt, let's get to some more questions, including the next one about a 403B conversion. We'll get to that right after the break.
All right, Joe, we are back from the break, and let's go ahead now and hear that question about a retirement account, that 403B.
Hey guys, my name is Jim in Washington, D.C. I have a question for you that may be a bit complicated, but I think I may have the rare exception for turning down free money. Basically, I just got out of a ton of credit card debt from really stupid spending habits when I was in my early 20s. I'm 27 now, leaving my current job for a new offer. I'm starting in July, and I have about $20,000 in a 403B. I'm curious about what I should do for the next year or two. I'm planning to enroll in law school in either fall 2021 or 22, and my new company has a great match, but I won't be vested until reaching 3 years at the company. Given they'll pull back their contributions, the free money we typically love, does it make more sense to roll over my $20,000 from the 403B into an IRA and contribute to that for the next year or two while building a non-existent emergency fund before law school? Anyway, I know it's a little complicated, but thanks for everything you guys do.
Jim, thanks for your question, man, and congrats on paying down your credit card debt. Also, bummer that it's a 3-year vesting period with your new company. All right, for listeners who don't know like what a vesting period is or a vesting schedule, it's simply a period of time that an employer requires you to stay with the company in order for you to fully own any benefits like an employer match that they might be providing. If you don't know what the vesting period is, it can be a little misleading because you might see a retirement account balance that's actually higher than it really is if you were to leave that job early. So be aware of that. Typically, vesting periods range between no time at all or 1 year and 5 years. I think when I started at my job, it was a 1 year vesting period. But
not too shabby,
but 3 years is like
a long time.
Prove your loyalty, Jim, before we actually give you this money in your retirement account.
Yeah, basically, that's why these vesting periods do exist, is because they are trying to encourage that loyalty. They want to dangle that carrot a little bit, you know, before they offer that benefit. And so, Jim, you mentioned starting your own retirement account. Unless your 403B is with one of the low-cost providers like Fidelity, then you should strongly consider rolling it over into an IRA with a low-cost investment company. And make sure you do a direct rollover from your current 403B provider to the company you want your IRA to be with. You want to make sure that you avoid having the check sent to you so that you can reduce the likelihood of creating a taxable event. You know, taxes, they're a part of life, but you don't want to have to pay taxes unnecessarily.
Matt, I read something recently. I want to say the amount lost typically by people who leave a job and get a check from their employer instead of having it transferred to another investment company.
And where they sit on it for too long.
Yeah, which is 60 days is the period that you're allowed to have it in your possession.
It's going
to
be a sad statistic.
It's like $1.5 trillion. I think it's 1.5 trillion. Crap. I could be wrong. I need to go back and look. But that I was like,
that seems insane.
Yeah, I was flabbergasted. It's crazy. Because yeah, the tax and penalties on that is massive. And so you want to make sure that that check does not get sent to you, that it gets sent directly to the investment company that you want to do business with, preferably one of the low cost ones. And Jim, let's talk about emergency funds too. That emergency fund is crucial, right? Focus on that before you attempt to tackle investing even more of your money, right? Especially if you're planning on going back to school and you'll likely be making less money for a period of time while you do have this job and you do have an income, it's more important to put more of that income into that e-fund, right? So that you can have 3 to 6 months of expenses set aside, or considering, you know, we're in a crazy time right now, maybe even something more like 6 to 9 months. You know, the quicker you can set up a meaningful emergency fund, the better position you're going to be in.
Yeah, couldn't agree more, man. And so, Jim, good luck with law school. Hopefully that means increased earnings for you upon graduation and the ability for you to invest even more of your income there in the future. All right, Joel, let's go ahead and get to our next question. This one is about how to approach paying down some student loan debt.
Hey, Matt and Joel. This is Rusty coming at you from West Texas. My wife has about $30,000 in student debt. With the way that her loans are set up, they are in 4 separate loan accounts. And usually when you pay towards a loan amount, it's divided into each account. Right now, because of everything going on, we have no interest and everything goes to principal. We also have the ability to choose what account our payments go to. We're currently hitting the accounts that have the highest interest rates, but not necessarily the most principal. Would it be advantageous of us to stay on that course, or do you think it might be a little bit better to go a different route? Maybe go for like the highest principal accounts first with 1% to 2% less interest rates than the lower principal accounts. Anyways, let me know what you guys think. Keep it up and thanks for the great podcast.
Hey, Rusty, thanks for your question. And since at the beginning of your question, you brought up the student loan interest holiday, which essentially lasts until October. Well, let's just mention that really quickly, Matt. I mean, I'm sure everybody out there who has a student loan now knows that there is not just an interest holiday, but a holiday on payments until October, which is great. And so you and I, for most people, were saying that the best thing for them to do is to take that break and to basically beef up their emergency fund, right? Just like we were mentioning to Jim's question.
That's right.
That is kind of the answer for a lot of people right now, is to have more cash on hand, save more money. And of course, if that deadline gets extended, or if, you know, student loan payments get deferred for an even longer period of time, we'll be sure to bring that up. But we hope that everyone out there with student loans is kind of using this time to save the money that they would have otherwise been paying towards their monthly student loan payment.
Yeah, especially with so many people in a more precarious position. But Rusty, you know, it sounds like y'all are in a solid spot financially, and you've continued making payments. You know, this is a really great move because, like you mentioned, the entire payment is applied to the principal balance. So when it comes to which balance to focus on, I love the idea of either paying off the loans with the lowest balance, which is the debt snowball approach, or paying off the loans with the highest interest rate first, which is the debt avalanche approach. Based on what you're saying, it sounds like those loans are one and the same for you, which is awesome.
Yeah, that's super awesome, yeah. Right? Essentially, you've got the best of both worlds here. So we would say, like, keep going with that strategy, right? It's got these 2 benefits, essentially, right? First, it means that you're going to be eliminating the debt with the highest rate most quickly, which is best from a number standpoint. So you're doing the mathematically correct move, right? But then you'll also be able to fully pay off some of those debts more quickly because you're also prioritizing the loans with the smallest balance. So from a psychological standpoint, that gives you this huge mental boost as well and some encouragement to kind of keep knocking that debt down. Matt, you and I, we did an episode on the debt avalanche versus the debt snowball quite a while back, and it was an interesting discussion. I think some people will be better served by taking the avalanche approach. Some people are better served by getting that psychological benefit and going with the snowball approach. But Rusty's basically like killing 2 birds with 1 stone, kind of with his approach here, which I love.
Yeah, I mean, like you mentioned, we dedicated an entire episode to that. That was episode 85, so we'd recommend for you to go back and listen to that one if you haven't heard that one before. But I was going to mention too, man, I've got a situation coming up where I've got multiple loans, and basically I've got to decide whether I'm going to take the avalanche approach, where I focus on the interest rate, or whether I focus on the balances that are the smallest, to where I'll take the snowball approach, right? And, you know, typically, like historically, I would have favored the math nerdy approach and said like, nope, I want to minimize the amount that I'm paying no matter what that does to my psyche. But I think a lot of times it's easy to discount the psychological effects of the snowball approach. And so I haven't completely decided yet, but I think I'm going to focus on the snowball approach, even though that interest rate is unfortunately the lowest. But I think having that psychological boost is going to be just worth the additional money that I would pay towards those loans.
Yeah, it makes me think of the Tommy Boy scene where he gets a refrigerator in his office and he's talking to his dad and he's like, you can keep 6 packs of beer. Soda in here. And his dad's like, whatever you want to keep cold, Tommy Boy. And I feel the same way kind of about the debt payoff approach. Like, whatever it takes to keep you motivated, Tommy Boy, like, make it happen. If it's the debt snowball, go for it. If it's debt avalanche, make that happen. Like, but whatever it is that takes your, you know, debt attacking prowess into hyperdrive, go for that. Make it happen.
Yeah, you know, the ultimate goal is to get focused and to pay off that debt quickly. So, you know, Rusty, it sounds like you're in a fantastic spot having both of those things lined up. And so we wish you the best of luck. All right, Joe, we've got a couple more questions, including one about loaning money to friends and family, as well as one about lowering your adjusted gross income in order to pay fewer taxes. We'll get to both of those right after the break.
All right, Matt, we're back from the break. And before I look up what streaming service I can find Tommy Boy on, let's get to these last two listener questions. First one about loaning money to family and friends.
Hi, this is Ezzy from Annapolis, Maryland. I recently discovered your podcast and I absolutely love it. My question is about loaning money to friends and family. I've always been a fiscally responsible person and have maintained a healthy emergency fund of about 6 months' living expenses. My sister is the complete opposite. She's been living paycheck to paycheck for years. It is, at least in part, a result of poor decision-making. Every couple of weeks or so, she'll ask to borrow money from me to cover bills or an unexpected car repair. I've pretty much become her interest-free payday loan service. I'm starting to get annoyed, but I feel obligated to keep loaning her money since she has, for the most part, paid me back in a timely manner. Am I further enabling her to keep making bad financial decisions? How do you guys feel about loaning money to friends and family?
Joel, now that you brought up Tommy Boy, I actually can't stop thinking about it. And so before we answer Ezzy's question, do you think you're a bigger David Spade fan or a Chris Farley fan?
Oh, that's tough, man. I mean, I feel like they're almost inseparable.
Really?
You know, they were in so many good movies together.
It's true.
Yeah. And Black Sheep, Tommy Boy. There was another one too, right? I don't know. They just felt like they were a pair and they went together. So I don't think I should have to choose.
No, I would choose David Spade. I'm going to choose because I came prepared in that 10 seconds that I waited for you to answer. Yeah, I like his dry, subtle, understated humor.
Yeah. I mean, Joe Dirt, that was a classic. And really, he's just had a longer career, too. So, I mean, so many good movies that David Spade's put out.
True. Rest in peace, Chris Farley.
No doubt. All right. Let's get on to Ezzy's question. Ezzy, by the way, that's what we call our 10-month-old, Matt. His name's Ezra. Call him Ezzy. So, I kind of feel like I'm...
You have a special bond here with Ezzy.
Exactly. Exactly. We're good friends already. So, congratulations on handling your money well, Ezzy. It's fascinating to me, too, how siblings with the same upbringing can handle money so differently. It makes me wonder how differently my kids are going to handle their personal finances, because personalities have like so much of an influence on how we save and how we spend. I know that my take on money is really different than my sister's. And so much of that has to do with kind of innate personality stuff. I just find that fascinating. So yeah, but I know that this is a tough thing that Ezzy's wading through, Matt. So yeah, what do you think? How should she be handling the relationship dynamics with her sister when it comes to kind of the asking for money thing?
Yeah, well, what's important to keep in mind here is that, you know, these relationship dynamics, they're the most important thing here, right? You know, if you are getting annoyed, then continuing to loan her money isn't sustainable. You might have enough money on hand to be able to easily loan her some, but like, it's not about the money. You know, it's about the damage that might occur to your relationship. I think that annoyance can build up over time and that could lead to resentment. And those aren't the kind of feelings that you're likely going to want to have for her.
Yeah, and as he also mentioned, enabling her sister, and I think that is a good question to be asking, but it's not necessarily the most important question, right? It's more about, I think, what you were just getting at, Matt. It's more about their relationship and less about her doing permanent damage to her sister and how her sister handles money, right? So the healthy and fair thing to do is to have a conversation with her, to be honest. And it doesn't have to be awkward, I don't think, but letting her know how you feel about the matter, that you're concerned about the effects of her continued borrowing on your relationship, that's an important step to take. And Matt, you and I, we always encourage people being honest about money, bringing up the conversation, having more conversations surrounding money with family and friends. In our culture, it's very awkward to bring up the topic at all, right? But at this point, you have a perfect window to be kind to your sister while you're talking about money and while you're broaching the subject. And I think you can talk about kind of the effects that her continued asks for money is having on your relationship without hurting the relationship overall. And I think actually sometimes those conversations actually strengthen a relationship because you can talk about the hard things. And if you don't talk about those hard things, you know, what kind of a relationship do you really, really have? And so, yeah, I think sometimes those harder discussions actually are the building blocks of a stronger relationship down the road.
Yeah. And Ezzy, if you do this well, then not only is your relationship likely to improve, like Joel mentioned, but you know, she might even be open to hear some practical advice on how she can get out of that cycle of living from paycheck to paycheck, like you mentioned. But even if that doesn't happen, she doesn't have to think about or handle money the way you do in order for y'all to move forward, you know? But she does need to respect your boundaries. And so in that conversation, it's important to create and to state these boundaries that are going to work for you to help you to maintain that healthy relationship.
Yeah, so in our opinion, really the only way to actually lend money to friends and family is to avoid it altogether. We just, Matt and I think it just so rarely works out that it just doesn't make sense to lend people money and then expect payment in return. And actually a survey by Bankrate last year showed that of all Americans who loaned money to family or friends, nearly 40% of those folks ended up losing some money. And again, that can harm the relationship.
Yeah.
So instead, give them the money if you can afford it. When it's done as a gift and not as a loan, it changes the dynamic and there's a better chance of preserving that relationship. In this case, though, where there's like a continued ask going on, where it happens frequently, then it is time just to kind of redefine the boundaries, redefine the relationship, and then have just a deeper discussion about what's going on in your sister's life with money. And you know what, Ezzy? I mean, I'm not sure where you learned to be so good with money, to have a good relationship with your personal finances. But if it wasn't from your parents, maybe you read a great book and then you started to get into podcasts and you just started to kind of educate yourself personally on this. Well, maybe your sister just hasn't stumbled upon some of those same things. And maybe she needs a little bit of direction, wants a little bit of help, but just doesn't know where to get it. Mm. And I think you can be a great influence on her by having that discussion. And by not starting it, it might mean that your sister doesn't get some of the knowledge that she actually really, really needs.
Yeah, maybe you could even turn her on to a specific money podcast that you're a fan of.
Which one are you thinking about, Matt?
Well, actually, I don't know. Maybe it would actually be worse to for her to like subtly hint to check out this podcast. And then she hears a question about herself.
That's a good point.
On the show.
Why are you talking smack about your sister in front of everybody out there, huh?
It's like turning on the news and like seeing yourself. You're just like, ah! Either way, Ezzy, we appreciate the concern that you have, you know, not only for your sister, but it's good to keep your relationship in mind, too. It's all good stuff. All right, Jill, let's hear our last question. And this one is about getting your AGI down, your adjusted gross income, as well as paying off some debt.
Hey, Matt. Hey, Joel. This is Zach from Seattle, Washington. I'm graduating college next week with a degree in construction management, and I've very thankfully been hired already by a large, well-established construction company. It's a pretty decent paying full-time job, and I want to make sure I'm being as responsible as I can with my paycheck. I did the math, and I should make about $52,000 this year. That's totaling all of my earned income plus the amount in grants and scholarships that I received that was more than my tuition fees and books. I'm calling because I want to reduce my tax liability and keep my AGI down as low near the $40,125 threshold as I can to reduce paying much into that 22% income bracket above that. I also have about $15,000 in consumer debt, though, some of which is as high as 19% APR, plus my student loans. I think the math works out that I should reduce my AGI as much as I can by putting $2,500 towards student loan interest. Then, and here's where I get confused, maxing out my 401k if I can, then with what I have left, pay down my consumer debt as much as possible. I think I'll be earning more later in life, so maybe a Roth 401k over a traditional 401k makes sense, but I don't want to just keep carrying around this consumer debt. I wonder if you guys have any advice about options I've overlooked or if I've made any mistakes in any of that math. Thanks, Matt and Joel. Love the show.
Hey, Zach, congrats on not just graduating, man, but scoring those grants and scholarships. Matt, I think the best way to pay for school is with somebody else's money and money that's already out there.
Absolutely.
Right? And it's just, honestly, it's typically just waiting on people to apply. And on a quick technical note, don't forget about tax deductions when you're doing your math. Like with the standard deduction, Zach, you're already at the AGI that you want because the standard deduction for individuals is $12,400 this year. So if you have an income of $52,000 minus $12,400 for the standard deduction, you are below the AGI of $40,000 that you're shooting for. So that's just something to keep on your radar. Looks like you're already where you want to be.
Yeah, that's a key point, Joel. And Zach, you know, it's understandable that you want to keep your AGI down. But don't make that your sole focus. You know, you mentioned maxing out your 401k. You didn't specify, but if your employer has a match, you know, the very first thing that you want to do is to contribute up to your company match. Otherwise, paying off that high interest rate consumer debt, that should be your top priority before maxing out any other retirement accounts. But then after that, once you've paid off that high interest rate debt, that's when we would certainly recommend an HSA if you qualify for one, and then a Roth IRA as well.
Yeah, and if some of that $15,000 in consumer debt is at lower interest rates, like in the 5% range or less, I think it can make sense to prioritize funding those accounts before paying off the specific debts that you mentioned. When we're talking about hyper low interest rate debt, I think saving and investing for the future can make more sense than paying those off, right? And on prioritizing student loan debt payoff, depending on the payoff timeframe, it might make sense to look into refinancing right now. If you currently have federal loans, you lose some of the advantages that those offer, but you could slash the interest rate in a big way, helping you pay them off more quickly. Right, this is not for everybody. We mentioned earlier when we took Rusty's question about student loan payoff that people are in this forbearance period right now. Anybody who has a federal student loan is not having to pay on those loans until October. But for some people who are hyper-focused on getting rid of debt and know that they can take care of it in a short time frame, refinancing into a much lower interest rate is possible and is something you should strongly consider, even though it means giving up some of the protections that you have, keeping your loans under the federal program.
Yeah, Joel, that's right. And we actually have an article up on the site that kind of documents some of the advantages of maintaining your federal loan, and we'll link to that in the show notes. And Zach, in the end, you know, lowering your AGI, your adjusted gross income, that can be the result of having student loan payments. You know, you mentioned being able to deduct that amount of interest that's going towards those payments. But don't get it turned around to, you know, to where the tail is wagging the dog, right? Your larger goal should be to be done with your debt and to earn more, which would effectively raise your AGI. But of course, you wouldn't want to skip out on those things just to avoid paying more income tax, right? You're not going to say no to a raise and you're not going to, you know, not pay off your debt just to be able to pay less in taxes. You want to make sure that you're not cutting off your nose to spite your face and that you've got things in the proper perspective.
Yeah, Matt, I like what you just said about not letting the tail wag the dog when it comes to AGI. I feel like AGI is a good thing for people to keep in mind. Lowering your adjusted gross income. And there are a couple ways you can do that, right? The more that you give, the more that you invest for the future in tax-advantaged accounts like 401ks and traditional IRAs, that is going to help lower your AGI, which lowers the amount of taxes you're going to pay. And I understand the desire for that. But at the same time, right, Zach wants to invest in a Roth IRA, which doesn't lower his AGI. And you and I, we would say that's a great move because we ultimately think that over the years, tax rates are going to have to go up to pay for some of the things that our country needs and is actually currently
spending a lot of money these days. Yeah.
Spending the money now in hopes to collect it later. But yeah, it's always a balance to try to lower your AGI and be thoughtful about the overall amount that you're paying in taxes, while at the same time, you're making the right money moves for yourself. And sometimes that means paying off debt, prioritizing that, as opposed to making it a priority to keep that adjusted gross income even lower for years to come.
Yeah, that's right, buddy. And so, Zach, best of luck to you on your financial journey. Joel, that's the last question for this episode, which means it's time to shift gears and get back to our beer, which was I Want to Dance with Somebody by Monday Night Brewing. What were your thoughts on this beer, buddy?
Man, I love the beer. I love the name. It does make me want to dance. But then if I dance, everyone gets freaked out because I dance really awkwardly. But yeah, this is a great IPA. Another smash hit in the line of hoppy beers that Monday Night's putting out. And the can art is like the emojis, what you would
the
do.
The dancing emojis.
The dancing emojis. So good. So yeah, branding on point, beer on point too.
Yeah, it's got the disco guy as well as the lady in the red dress.
Salsa. Is that salsa?
I think so. Something like that.
Yeah. Or tango. I don't know. One of the two.
Well, there's no rose in the mouth. So
okay,
that's the tango, right?
That's the giveaway on tango.
I mean, this makes me think of recently you and I had a conversation about how like you and I were both drinking less beer, specifically while we're eating meals. And the reason for that is because there's so much delicious flavor within the beers that it almost feels like blasphemous to enjoy such a great beer like this while, you know, eating a slice of pizza or having some tacos or something. This is a perfect example of that kind of beer where when I drink this beer, I want to just only drink this beer, and I guess we can talk about money while we're doing it. But I don't want any other flavors in my mouth because there's so much going on with this specific beer, and I want to enjoy every aspect of it. Like you said, this is another fantastic beer by Monday Night. This is a Hop Hut release, and so these are the beers that they're making with a little extra love. Since so many people love IPAs, you and I are totally on that train. I feel like this New England IPA could hold its own against some of the best true New England IPAs, you know? Like, yeah. Like we've had a lot of great beers from the Northeast, and I feel like this one is just a perfect example of that style. I'm glad that you and I got to share this one, man. And again, we would recommend for folks to check out Monday Night if they're ever in the Atlanta area.
For sure. And if you do, you'll probably find us there because we like to hit it
Less lately because we're not really spending much time in breweries, but we still go there to pick up their special releases.
Yeah, you might see us wandering in, wandering out. But yeah. All right, Matt, that's going to do it for this episode. Again, for anybody who wants to submit a question, we would love to hear from you. We love these episodes and we would love to have your question on an upcoming one. Just go to howtomoney.com/ask in order to submit yours. And also go to howtomoney.com for the show notes for this episode.
And Joe, we also talked about the can art for this beer, right? And every beer that we enjoy on this podcast, we snap a quick little picture and we post it on Instagram. And so if you do not follow us on Instagram and want to see what some of these beers look like, as well as some other behind the scenes kind of pictures that we post from time to time, give us a follow on Instagram. Our handle is HowToMoneyPod. Joel, that's going to be it for this episode, buddy. Until next time.
Best friends out.
Best friends out.